Because of listeners like you, Preborn has helped to rescue over 67,000 babies. Your $28 to sponsor one ultrasound doubled a baby's chance at life. Your tax-deductible gift saves lives, so please join us in this mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
And good Wednesday morning to you all. Fred Jackson sitting in for Jenna today. Glad to be with you. There's a lot going on in the world this morning. You probably heard on our newscast this morning that India launched missile strikes against Pakistan overnight. Tensions between those two nuclear-powered countries, always a concern. We understand there's breaking news this morning. Apparently, the United States and China are going to hold tariff talks this weekend, I believe in Switzerland, neutral turf. So that is happening this morning. We had a meeting yesterday between the new Prime Minister of Canada, Prime Minister Carney, and President Trump in the Oval Office. That was interesting. We're going to get into that in a little bit. But there's a lot of breaking news this morning also on the transgender front. I tell you what. Transgenderism is probably one of the, I would call it one of the key issues of our day, quite frankly, because it is so confrontational against, obviously, the truth of Scripture. But also, it is, I think, one of the defining issues of the last election, that even Democrats and independents said, this is crazy, allowing guys, biological guys, to play in women's sports. And we're also going to deal with a story in just a few minutes. We're going to go back to Loudoun County, Virginia, which seems to be the scene of so much of these challenges to what is normal. And in this case, it's a bunch of guys, biological guys, being investigated because there was a girl in their changing room. And Loudoun County is taking the side of the girl who was taking pictures of the boys. Crazy times, but let's get into it. All right, Supreme Court decision yesterday, a 6-3 vote saying that President Trump's administration can enforce its ban on transgender people in the military while legal challenges proceed. This has been one of the big issues. President Trump, in the election campaign, promised he would be doing this. His Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth, has promised he has worked on this. So this is a big decision by the United States Supreme Court yesterday, 6-3 decision. Hopefully it is a sign when the final decision is made, likely by the United States Supreme Court, that they will vote again along this line. Yesterday, our news team talked with Elaine Donnelly, who is president of the Center for Military Readiness. She had this to say about this important Supreme Court decision. Cut one.
Gender dysphoria is a medical condition, one of hundreds, that make a person ineligible for military service. What the Solicitor General said to the Supreme Court was, this is a military decision. The courts are not really qualified or even authorized, for that matter, to make policy for the military. And the district judge out there in Seattle, Washington, he had exceeded his authority, and the Department of Justice correctly asked the Supreme Court to put that ruling on hold, allow the policy to go forward. There are three different lawsuits that are pending. All of them are going to take time to wind their way through the courts. But in the meantime, this president will be allowed to pursue and implement the policy.
All right, that was Elaine Donnelly, president of the Center for Military Readiness, and she's right. It's not over yet, folks. This is a battle that is going to continue. But at least for now, the United States Supreme Court is signaling that they are going to allow the president to continue in the meantime with this ban on transgender people in the military, because it has to do, as Elaine Donnelly was pointing out, gender dysphoria. It's a medical condition. And these people who are suffering this medical condition, they need some counseling, but they don't need to be on the front lines with our other military people. That's the basic, that's where it stands this morning. Now, as I mentioned, Pete Hegseth, our Secretary of Defense, even yesterday, and I think it even came out before this Supreme Court decision, was had a speech down in Florida, I believe it was, and certainly he made it known that this is a brand new military, brand new compared to the Joe Biden years, where wokeness is simply not going to be tolerated. Cut number nine.
We are leaving wokeness and weakness behind. No more pronouns. No more climate change obsession. No more emergency vaccine mandates. No more dudes in dresses. We're done with that.
No more dudes in dresses. I'll tell you what, these woke policies, we've talked about this before, folks. These woke policies, I believe, had a lot to do with the downturn in recruitment numbers in our military over the Biden years. No question about it. I find it fascinating that since the election, Donald Trump back as president of the United States, that those recruitment numbers have shot up again. Going to meet our quotas for this. So don't tell me there wasn't the thinking across this country, hey, I don't want to send my sons and my daughters into that kind of woke environment. Not going to do it. And this is what long-term military families were saying, you know, that had sons and daughters coming up of age to go into the military. No, I can't encourage my son and daughter to go into that kind of environment. But thankfully, that is changing. Hey, some more good news on this transgender front. Yesterday, the Pennsylvania State Senate approved a bill to ban biological males from competing in women's and girls' sports at the collegiate and K-12 levels. Now, of course, this Republican-penned bill likely is going to face some opposition amongst the Democrat-controlled House of Representatives. But very interesting, in this Senate vote yesterday, bill passed 32-18 with five Democrats crossing party lines to join with all the 27 Republicans in voting yes. So there you have it. Some Democrats, at least, are getting the message that the American people are simply, folks, they're fed up with this nonsense. They're fed up with this confrontation against biological truth. That just because someone says, I feel like a girl, therefore I am. This battle is going to continue. It's going to go through the courts. And as I mentioned off the top, there's a new front in this battle this morning. It's coming out of Loudoun County, Virginia, which so often is the case. You have three boys out of high school in Loudoun County. They're in the boys' locker room. According to the reports, a girl, apparently declaring that she's a boy, is in that locker room. And she, according to the reports, starts videotaping these three young men. What happens? These three young men complain about this girl in their locker room. Guess who's being investigated? Not the girl, but the three boys. This is an interesting case, once again, out of Loudoun County. Well, I was listening to an interview this morning with Josh Hetzler with the Founding Freedom Law Center. He is now representing these boys. And this is what he has to say about this case. Cut number seven.
The Loudoun County policy certainly violates state law under Governor Youngkin. They continue to ignore it. And it also violates the recent executive orders from President Trump. So that's a big problem for them, and we're going to have to address that.
Josh, is this the first time this has occurred in this school district? Because it just seems like Loudoun County is always in the news regarding these topics that parents should be handling. It shouldn't be litigated in the schools.
Well, I don't know how frequently it's happening, but I could tell you this. The policy allows for it to be happening all the time. And parents may never know. Here, this happened to come to light, and now the Founding Freedoms Law Center is representing these three boys and their families to vindicate them. But so this could be happening all the time. And that's the problem with this policy, is that we just don't know. But this is anecdotally one egregious situation that we're having to work through.
You know, I find it really interesting how many times Loudoun County has been in the news in recent years with regards to parental rights, with regards to common sense. And as the lawyer there, Josh Hetzler of the Founding Freedom Law Center, was pointing out, there is the policy of the Trump administration. There is the policy of the state of Virginia that says Loudoun County is wrong. Well, that you're not allowed to have biological boys and girls sports, and now you have this case. Will be interesting to see where it goes, but in this case, you have three young men in a changing room, and they feel uncomfortable, obviously, with this, especially, now I think, I may be wrong, but I think there is a law, actually, against videotaping inside a locker room, and according to these reports, this girl was doing this. Anyway, we are certainly going to follow this, folks. And, you know, it's really interesting. I find it over and over again. It's within our education system, in our schools, where these problems keep happening. In our universities, where we have not only these problems with regards to transgenderism, but you have these problems with regards to anti-Semitism. And we have said for many years now, and I believe, honestly, that this started way back, it was back to the 60s, when our education system became propaganda tools for the left, and quite frankly, for rebellion against godly biblical standards. And this is why, you know, to mention anti-Semitism, this is why we're actually seeing, whether it's Columbia University, Harvard, Yale, and many others, I think a lot of people were shocked in the wake of what happened on October 7, 2023 in Israel with the massacre of more than 1,200 Israeli men, women, and children, that within 2 days, there were pro-Hamas demonstrations on these campuses. And, you know, we saw the hearings in the wake of all of this where there were hearings on Capitol Hill with regards to the presidents of these Ivy League schools and, you know, yeah, we're going to do something about anti-Semitism. But here's the problem. It has been allowed to fester for years and years and years. And the Trump administration is trying to kick back against this, cut off funding for some of these schools, federal, unless they can prove that they're actually doing something to stop anti-Semitism. But I think the culture inside of these schools, as I say, whether it's the transgenderism, which seems to be more of a high school, and certainly in some universities, that problem that is there, but also on these campuses with regards to anti-Semitism. It's been brewing for so long. You have so many professors who are anti-Israel who have charged ahead with these boycotts. And you even have this, the fight is going on right now. I think it was Tufts University the other day. There was talk about professors there that want to the university to denounce any ties against Israel. Columbia University announced yesterday that it's laying off nearly 180 after Trump pulled $400 million over its anti-Semitism concerns. Now, here's what's really interesting. Those 180 represent a tiny amount. They were being funded, these 180, by federal grants, your taxpayers' dollars. But that means 80% are still being funded. There's still 80% of the staff still being funded by federal grants. And, of course, we all know Harvard University, what does it have, 50-point-something billion in its cash accounts? And they're still squawking about it. They say they have some kind of right to federal funding. No, the only way to fight this, folks, is what President Trump is doing, and that is to cut off funding. All right, we got much more ahead on this program. Fred Jackson sitting in for Jenna this morning. Don't go away. We'll talk a little bit more about this meeting yesterday between the Prime Minister of Canada and President Trump. Back in a moment.
You could be a part of our first ever weekend with AFA, Thursday, October 2nd through Saturday, October 4th in Tupelo, Mississippi.
Our weekend with AFA event in October is going to be a chance to meet AFA supporters in person.
We'll have tours, fellowship, special speakers, and more.
I'll do some stand-up comedy, Abe will do some preaching, and I'm really excited about it.
It's a weekend with AFA, Thursday, October 2nd through Saturday, October 4th in Tupelo, Mississippi. Speakers will include Abraham Hamilton III, Jenna Ellis, Tim Barton, Tim Wildman, and more.
I am thoroughly looking forward to our weekend with AFA coming up in October, where we're going to be able to meet our supporters like yourself, to fellowship, to visit our facilities here in Tupelo, and to have everyone come together for a wonderful weekend.
That's October 2nd through 4th. It's a weekend with AFA, and we hope you can join us. Register at afa.net/weekend. That's afa.net/weekend.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
And indeed, welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning. Fred Jackson sitting in for Jenna today. Well, an interesting meeting yesterday between Canada's new Prime Minister, Mark Carney, and President Trump in the Oval Office. It was kind of interesting. The day before, I guess it was Monday, reporters were asking President Trump about the upcoming meeting yesterday with the Prime Minister, new Prime Minister of Canada. And the Trump was asked, so why is he coming down to me? And Trump said, I don't know. It was like this nonchalant, you know, this guy coming down from Ottawa. Yeah, I guess I'm going to talk to him about some stuff. But yesterday, they arrived, and almost immediately, the conversation between the two leaders was opened up. If you didn't follow the Canadian election, Donald Trump, and we may hear a little bit of this in this clip we're going to play for you, this Oval Office meeting yesterday. Donald Trump, I think he even said he was on the ballot, because Mark Carney, who took over from Justin Trudeau as leader of the capital L Liberal Party there in Canada, made Donald Trump and his tariff threats the big issue for him. And the Liberal Party went from a 20 to 25 point deficit in the polls over the capital C Conservative Party, led by Pierre Poilievre. And that deficit was wiped out. And Carney ends up winning. Now, he has a minority, what's called a minority government. Canada has 4, 5, 6 political parties. Much like in Britain, you need coalitions. Like in Israel, you need coalitions to get power. But right now, he has a minority government. But the big issue is tariffs, and that's what they were expected to talk about yesterday during this meeting. So I wanted to play you a little bit of the I was going to say exchange, but Carney didn't get to say much in this meeting yesterday. Donald Trump just kind of took over. But anyway, here's a little bit of that meeting yesterday in the Oval Office between President Trump and Prime Minister Mark Carney. Cut four.
Thank you very much, everybody. It's a great honor to have Prime Minister Mark Carney with us. As you know, just a few days ago, he won a very big election in Canada. And I think I was probably the greatest thing that happened to him, but I can't tell you about that. His party was losing by a lot, and he ended up winning, so I really want to congratulate him. It was probably one of the greatest comebacks in the history of politics, maybe even greater than mine.
When you get rid of that artificially drawn line, somebody drew that line many years ago with like a ruler, just a straight line right across the top of the country. When you look at that beautiful formation, when it's together. I'm a very artistic person, but when I looked at that beauty, I said, that's the way it was meant to be. But, you know, I do feel it's much better for Canada, but we're not going to be discussing that unless somebody wants to discuss it.
Well, if I may, As you know from real estate, there are some places that are never for sale.
That's true.
We're sitting in one right now, you know, Buckingham Palace, that you visited as well.
That's true.
Having met with the owners of Canada over the course of the campaign last several months, it's not for sale, won't be for sale ever.
When you consider what Mr. Carney just said, that Canada is not for sale, does this make the discussion a little more difficult to start on?
No, not at all. No, not at all. No, time. Time will tell. It's only time. But I say, never say never. Trudeau, when I spoke to him, I used to call him Governor Trudeau. I think that probably didn't help his election. But when I spoke to him, I said, so why are we taking your cars? Why are we taking your, we want to make them ourselves. I mean, I said, and if the price of your cars went up, or if we put a tariff, if we put a tariff on your cars of 25%, what would that mean to you? He said, that would mean the end of Canada. He actually said that to me. And I said, that's a strange answer, but I understand his answer.
Yeah, there you have it. A little bit of the exchange yesterday and kind of went on and on. And, of course, during the election up there, President Trump, called, I want to make Canada 51st state. That blew up. I think a lot of people wanted to vote the Conservative Party up there. But Donald Trump... kind of put an end to that, kind of in your face, Canada, want to make you the 51st state. And I think that is going to be a challenge. But I was a little surprised with the president's congratulations to Mark Carney yesterday. Good fight. You did well in the debate, et cetera, et cetera. Because Carney is very much the opposite of Donald Trump. And here's what I mean by that. Carney is a globalist. In fact, during the election campaign, he vowed to make Canadian manufacturing and energy production less reliant on the U.S. and lower trade barriers between provinces. And he really is going after, because he has a history, Carney does, with the Bank of England, for example. He has been in the circle, in the realm of bankers in Europe. And it is believed that Carney wants to lessen the dependence on the United States with regards to trade and increase Canada's relationship with Europe, which I find very, very interesting. We'll see what's going to happen there. So it's I don't think you can turn off the relationship that has been in existence between Canada and the United States when it comes to trade, biggest trading partner that the United States has. And vice versa, Canada does depend on a lot of the import goods come from the United States. So you can't just stop that. Here's another interesting element. The province of Alberta, I often describe it as Canada's Texas, because Alberta is rich in natural gas and oil. Some people say there's been some estimate. I heard a report last week where basically Canada has more oil and gas in the ground than, Saudi Arabia. So I'm not sure of the accuracy of that, but it just goes to show you. In fact, the United States imports well over $1 billion worth of oil and gas from Canada each year, and they want to increase. The United States wants to increase that. So that certainly is a factor there. Alberta is not a fan of Mark Carney, the new prime minister, because the new prime minister has a financial advisor to the former prime minister, Trudeau, was all in on climate change, was all in on this, and he doesn't like fossil fuels. Now, he changed his story during the election campaign, but a lot of Canadians don't trust him, quite frankly. He is a politician, and say anything to get elected. They have in Canada what's called a carbon tax. And I'll tell you what, that it's a burden. Cost of living in Canada is absolutely incredible. Their socialized medicine system has fallen apart up there. If you're elderly, look out. And it was very interesting. I read in the National Post is one of the more conservative newspapers in Canada. During the election campaign, they profiled one of the Liberal candidates, I think, in the Ottawa area. She's a medical doctor. And they went into some of her social media and what she has said in the past. And here's one of the things with regards to seniors in Canada. She said, I wonder if their elderly demographic is similar to ours, referring to another country. Canada's solution must include stop keeping ancients alive so long. She's a medical doctor. Reduce expectations of patients to address every tiny complaint and insert government-paid human office scribes into family practice. But that line, stop keeping agents alive so long. Now, she claims she was taken out of context, but that's very troubling. Also, this medical doctor, who, by the way, she didn't win her election. Thank the good Lord for that. She said, imagine my thoughts when assessing a pregnant patient. I telepathically advise the fetus to sue the owner of the uterus while exiting it to this world. Of necessity, a mother must be a climate change denier. Wow. But this is, she was allowed to run for the Liberal Party. So that's why I say, I think we have to be very, very careful of what's going to happen and pray for our friends in Canada, because I think the Justin Trudeau agenda is still alive, very much alive in that country. You know, it's really interesting. You remember what Justin Trudeau did. And this is what worries me about Mark Carney. His background is a banker. Remember what Justin Trudeau did during COVID with the truckers? He froze their bank accounts. Remember that big protest that occurred in Ottawa? He ended it by freezing the bank accounts of anybody participating in that protest. We know governments are pressuring banks on the climate change agenda. Don't lend money to certain individuals. This is how these people think, these globalists, as I say, Mark Carney is a globalist. They think this way. And Trudeau is famous for saying, you know, this small minority with unacceptable views. I think that's the way he described these truckers. And that's the way these liberals think. And I don't care if it's not just Canada, folks, it's here. And we saw this with the Biden administration. Shut down any opinion that goes against you. We saw that over and over again. Going back to Loudoun County in Virginia, you know what happened with parents there who objected? Who objected to biological boys being allowed in washrooms there? Listen, isn't it interesting how all of this is connected? And folks, it really comes down to a biblical worldview. And that's where the battle is right now, folks. You know, some people say, well, we're not going to talk about politics in our church and our Sunday school class. No. Politics is connected to biblical worldview right now, folks. And if you listen to our newscasts, we started off this program today talking about transgenderism. Don't tell me that's a political issue. No, that's a biblical issue, folks. And we need to be educating people. That's what we do here at American Family Radio, American Family News. We're educating you on what is going on out there. We're going to have Chris Woodward from American Family News coming in just a few minutes to review some of the big cases that are going on right now with regards to the threats to religious freedom in this country. And it's happening, folks. It's happening. People, Christians, whether it's in the education system, the medical field, other fields, they're being persecuted for their points of view. It's happening. Which is why the president has set up this commission to really look hard at this issue. And it's Christians in particular. Let's not you know, be foggy about this. It is Christians in particular that are continually under attack. And it has to be fought. It has to be exposed, and it has to be fought. So please don't use that line, well, that's all politics. No. This is spiritual warfare that's going on in this country right now. Hey, listen, you may have heard about, and we got to go to a break in a second. You may have heard about the air traffic control situation at Newark Airport. There was panic last weekend because the ATC system shut down. Now, it was only for 30 seconds, but air traffic controllers, they lost sight of planes on their radar. Here's a little bit of a Newark air traffic controller talking about losing radar. Cut number six.
I'm going to move you here because I just got told that the approach lost all their radar. Three of their four radar screens went black, and they have no frequencies.
United 674, we lose now. Radar contact lost. We lost our radar.
Do I have Bravo clearance?
No, you do not have a Bravo clearance. We lost our radar, and it's not working correctly. Radar service terminates, block VFR, green change approved. If you want a Bravo clearance, you can just call the towers when you get closer. And we don't have a radar, so I don't know where you are.
That is the last thing you want to hear as a pilot on approach to a busy airport. We don't know where you are. Now, as I say, thank God it only lasted about 30 seconds. There could have been a disaster, a tremendous disaster. But we know the air traffic control system in this country has been in bad shape for years. Yet, Chuck Schumer, minority Senate leader, know what? He wants to blame the Trump administration for what happened in Newark last weekend. Cut number eight.
It's outrageous. And it's because of Trump and Doge. FAA has been cut. Employees have been cut. Top people have left in exasperation at what Trump is trying to do. If there's any place where Trump chaos, which is so typical of this administration, can really cause loss of life, it's at the FAA.
No. Chuck Schumer, I'm not going to call him a liar, but he's being less than truthful. Let's be very clear about that. The air traffic control system, as I mentioned, in this country is in trouble because it hasn't been upgraded technically. They use, we're told, some of the reports coming because of what happened in Newark last weekend, we're told they still use things like floppy disks with their computers. No wonder some of the systems are failing. And it's amazing there haven't been more incidents like what happened in Newark the other day. And it's not because of Chuck Schumer there. He's talking about cuts. It's not because of cuts in the FAA. As I say, this situation technically with our air traffic control system has been known for years. The Biden administration was in power for the last 4 years. What did they do to correct this problem? Apparently nothing. They knew about this. No, they wanted to spend billions of dollars on charging stations for electrical cars. That was their priority. Climate change. They wanted to spend hundreds of millions of dollars bailing out student loans, taxpayers paying back the loans of students who had borrowed hundreds of thousands of dollars. See, that was the priority of the Biden administration. And for Chuck Schumer to come back and say this is all Trump's fault, it's a falsehood. Anyway, much more ahead. We're going to be talking about, as I mentioned, we're going to be talking about the threats to the religious freedom of Christians in this country, and there are people trying to do something about it. Don't go away. We're right back with Jen Ellis in the morning, Fred Jackson sitting in. We're back.
Will you take a moment and celebrate life with me? Last year, Preborn helped to rescue over 67,000 babies from abortion. Hi, this is Jenna Ellis, and I want to thank you for your partnership. Think about what you did. 67,000 babies are taking their first breath now because of you. Your $28 sponsored one ultrasound that was given to a woman as she was deciding about the future of her child. Once she saw her precious baby for the first time and heard their sweet heartbeat, her baby's chance at life doubled. But Preborn's mission is not only to rescue babies' lives, but also to lead women to Christ. Last year, Preborn Network Clinics saw 8,900 women receive salvation. Your help is crucial to continue their life-saving work. Your caring, tax-deductible donation saves lives, so please be generous. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR, or dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby. Your love can save a life.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
And indeed, welcome back. Fred Jackson sitting in for Jenna today. And joining me in studio right now is reporter extraordinaire, American Family News, Chris Woodward.
Thank you very much. I'll try to be extraordinary.
You always are, you know. And we give Chris a hard time on today's issues with regards to his knowledge of music from the 60s and 70s.
Sorry, my therapist has talked me through many challenges.
Okay, very good. Hey, he's learned a lot about the Carpenters?
Yes.
Yeah.
Whatever 45s are. I'm going to Google that later.
All right. Well, let's go into current day issues. Just recently, the Trump administration announced the setting up of a Presidential Religious Liberty Commission. Why'd they do that?
Yes, well, they're making sure that people in the United States of America have their constitutionally protected rights to things like religious freedom or religious liberty. This is something that the Trump administration is very focused on. They want to make sure that people of faith, Christians or otherwise, are allowed to do things in the workplace or at home, maybe in the public square, that people like Joe Biden might have frowned upon when they were in office.
You know, threats to Christian liberties, and I mentioned Chris before, just before the break, that it is Christians,
yes,
that are in the crosshairs of the far left, and they're using every tool possible. I think one of the first cases that really highlighted the danger to Christian freedoms in this country, at least for me in recent years, was Baronelle Stutzman.
Right, yeah.
She was the florist in the Seattle area. She welcomed all customers into her shop there in Seattle, her flower shop, including those who were open homosexuals. They could buy flowers just like everybody else. But when she was asked by homosexuals to provide flowers for their wedding, air quotes, she refused.
Yes.
And she has been persecuted for years over that. Mm-hmm. There have been Christian bakers, similar stories,
right.
Christian photographers, similar stories. And so all of that, I think, has led up to, I hope, a heightened awareness that Christians and their freedoms are under attack in this country.
Yes. And one of the cases that has occurred at the U.S. Supreme Court since the Jack Phillips case, which never solved the issue of whether or not he had to design that same-sex wedding cake. They merely just said Colorado was mean to him and its prosecution. A case that has occurred since then was another one out of the same area of Colorado, Lakewood, Colorado, near Denver. That involved Lori Smith. She's a graphic designer that wants to make, among other things, wedding websites. But Colorado said, listen, if you do that for one set of couples, you've got to do it for all couples. And Lori, like Jack Phillips said, I cannot design, I cannot use my artistic talents, my speech, to design something for a couple that I disagree with on religious grounds. That went to the Supreme Court, and with the help of Alliance Defending Freedom, Lori Smith was told, you don't have to do that. So that has seemingly kind of started to shut the door on these cases, but you're still seeing people like Jack Phillips or Baronelle, other folks, persecuted, harassed, really, is a good term to use, especially for Jack Phillips, when it comes to their taking a stand on religious grounds.
Now, we have a case that you've been dealing with recently with regards to a lawmaker, a Republican, I believe, in the state of Maine?
Yes. Her name is Laurel Libby. She was actually on Fox News yesterday. I've talked to her myself for AFN purposes. But Laurel Libby is a state representative in the great state of Maine, and she went on social media and posted pictures of a sporting event that featured males competing against females. The reason why she did this is because she, like a lot of other people in Maine, and certainly the United States of America, do not believe it's right for males to compete against females, for females to have to compete against males, I should say. And so she went on social media and said, basically, this is not right. These clearly are males. And you can tell from the pictures that she posted, these clearly are males standing on the podium, taking spots away from female athletes and violating their Title IX rights. That effort got her censured in the state of Maine. And by that, basically, the state legislature voted to punish her to the point where she is not allowed to cast votes and have them count when it comes to bills and resolutions, things like that. She has gone to court over that. She's not been successful, but in recent days, she appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court, asking them to allow her to be able to vote and represent her constituents and have those votes counted so that way they have somebody there in the state capitol. We'll see whether or not the Supreme Court responds to that. Probably, I would guess they would answer that very soon.
On another front, but still connected to the main theme here, has been challenges to parental rights in various school districts across the country.
Mm-hmm. And one case that involves parental rights but also religious freedom is one out of Montgomery County, Maryland, which is a very liberal part of Maryland. It's kind of the Loudoun County, Virginia of Maryland, probably one of the most liberal places in the United States of America. But an interreligious or diverse coalition of parents, Christians, Muslims, and Jews, went to the Supreme Court about 2 weeks ago. Saying that the Montgomery County public school system took away their opt-out for instruction that included things like LGBTQ books being read to kids as young as five. Mm. And so these Christian, Jews, and Muslims said that the Supreme Court, they told the Supreme Court, we want our opt-out back. We had it for a very long time, but the school system just took it away from us. And Supreme Court, these are issues best handled by us based on our religious beliefs. Therefore, we want the opt-out back so we can exercise our religious and parental rights by introducing these things, if we want to, at our home versus our kids being indoctrinated. And that appeared to be, there were stories from the Associated Press even that seemed to think that the justices were very open to the arguments from those parents than the school system. Even Justice Elena Kagan took issue with the graphic nature of the books being read to kids as young as five.
It's amazing to me. But it speaks to, I think, Chris, of the desire. I'm not going to say everyone in the education system in this country, but there is many people in charge, they want to indoctrinate the minds of little boys and girls as young as four and five in rebellion to scriptural truth and in rebellion to what their parents want their kids to be exposed to.
And they're using tax dollars to do it. That's the other thing. If you're in Montgomery County, Maryland, you're paying for this through things like your property tax. So even if you don't have kids in this school system, or maybe your kids are grown, they're not in school anymore, if you're in this school system, you're still paying for this garbage to be taught to kids. And, you know, we've talked to the Beckett Law Firm. They're the ones that represented this diverse coalition of parents. And they've said, listen, a win for these parents in one little part of Maryland is a win for parents nationwide, because it will make sure that schools have to offer and continue to offer that opt-out, which, again, is also a religious freedom issue at the end of the day.
You know, and, of course, I think, is it in California where there is a law now where parents don't have to be told?
Right.
About what their kids are being exposed to?
Yeah, that's been a big issue for groups like Alliance Defending Freedom and also Liberty Justice Center. Basically, schools have tried to, and this has been a problem in other parts of the country too, even places in the Midwest and in the Northeast, but schools have tried to operate as a policy where they are allowing a student to go by different pronouns if he or she chooses. And they're doing it all under the radar, against the parents' wishes, perhaps. They're not notifying the parents. There was one or two school systems in California that passed, the boards of education there passed measures saying that schools had to let parents know when a student wants to go by a different set of pronouns. But the attorney general there said that's not legal. That's gone to court, and it's still pretty much in the court system at this point.
A lot of parents very concerned, and we talked about it at the top of the show today, with regards to the transgender agenda in our school system.
Yeah, it's been a huge issue, and you know, it's not just a sports issue, although that is something that Fox and other news outlets pay a lot of attention to. But a transgender policy at a school also violates a young lady's Title IX rights in the bathroom or the locker room, shared spaces. But even as you pointed out at the beginning of the program, and if you didn't hear the show, go back and listen to the podcast later on AFR.net. There's a situation now in Loudoun County, Virginia, where boys are being investigated for having concerns about having to undress in a locker room with a girl that pretends to be a boy.
And she was videotaping.
Yes, and she was videotaping, which some might say is also a violation of their privacy rights. Privacy rights being one of the big issues that people like Riley Gaines, Paula Scanlon, Macy Petty, other females have long talked about these Title IX issues.
You know, a lot of this has broken out during the Biden years. We really saw this kind of opposition to Christian freedoms. I know you covered cases of pro-life demonstrators demonstrating peacefully.
Yes.
And ended up being arrested.
Mm-hmm.
and prosecuted by the Biden administration. There is that case in Pennsylvania.
Yes. Mark Houck was the guy that was basically forced from his home at gunpoint while he was having breakfast with his
family.
By
the FBI.
By the FBI with guns. Yeah. It wasn't just, sir, can you come with us? We've got a few questions for you downtown kind of thing. Mm. They forced him out of his home at gunpoint and arrested him. Now, he was later, he went to court over that, and he was acquitted with help from Thomas More Society, which is one of many religious freedom law firms there. And really, the issue that he was arrested and charged for wasn't even anything to do with the charge that they levied against him. They accused him of violating the FACE Act, basically, when all it was Mark felt that his son was being threatened or harassed by a pro-abortion person. And being a father, he got into a kerfuffle with that individual to try to, you know, give him the business and let him know, you know, hey, what you're doing to my kid is not right. And the Biden administration basically like threw the book at him, trying to make an example over him. And he's one of many. I mean, there have been grandmas that have been arrested and prosecuted and sentenced to jail for the rest of their life over violating the FACE Act. And oh, by the way, during that same time period that Joe Biden was in office doing those kinds of things, they rarely, if ever, went after the people bombing pregnancy resource centers.
I know.
Which shows you the double standard. And it also goes to show you that even if a presidential candidate pretends to be or tells you that he's a moderate, take it with a grain of salt, because Joe Biden clearly was not a moderate on the life issue.
Well, speaking of Joe Biden, in recent days, he's been giving some interviews, and I listened to an excerpt from an interview he did with the BBC in the last couple of days. I want you to listen to this carefully because, you know, he's asked about should you have gotten out earlier, but he talks about his agenda. Listen carefully to this, cut number five.
Should you have withdrawn earlier, given someone else a bigger chance?
I don't think it would have mattered. We left at a time when we had a good candidate. She was fully funded. And what happened was, I had become what we had set out to do, no one thought we could do. And become so successful in our agenda, it was hard to say, no, I'm going to stop now. I meant what I said when I started, that I think I'm prepared to hand this to the next generation. It's a transition government. But things moved so quickly that it made it difficult to walk away.
He talks about his agenda, and he didn't get it finished. But he regards what he did. He's not apologizing for any of these things that we've been talking about, mm-hmm. these threats to Christian values and to Christian freedoms in this country. He's not apologizing for that. He said, you know, we came along, we were a transition government, and we want to hand it to the next generation. Well, when I think Democrats talk about the next generation, we're talking about the AOCs and these radical leftists who are now rising mm-hmm. to power in the Democratic Party.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't matter how many times they try to pretend that, you know, AOC or David Hogg is not running the party. Clearly they are. They're the ones with the biggest fan bases. They're the ones making the news for saying all kinds of things. I also take great exception to President Biden. You know, with respect to any president and the Oval Office, he's lying when he says, quote, we left at a time. Yeah. Joe Biden was forced out.
Sure.
Nancy Pelosi and other Democrats met with him and said, you've got to go. Mm-hmm. You're hurting the party. We're the chances of us defeating Donald Trump are slim to none based on things like your performance at that debate. But also the economy was terrible. Groceries were unaffordable. People were living on a credit card far more than they were during the Trump administration. All these things. So he is, with all due respect, he is lying when he tells you that he left. And also, he said we had a good candidate. Polling showed that Kamala Harris was not liked. Kamala Harris, they had no other choice. Of course they're going to say they're going to vote for her. So you can't take that as we had a good candidate. What other choice did they have? And two, as far as her, or three, as far as her being fully funded, they just moved the money over from Joe Biden to Kamala Harris.
Yeah.
So of course she was fully funded. All of that is, to use one of his words, malarkey.
Well, I tell you what, there is a vast difference now between the two political parties in this country. And I think Joe Biden, even though he's a bit foggy sounding sometimes, understood that the agenda of the Democratic Party is really very radical, and they were going to use the power of the courts to enforce that agenda on the American people, whether they wanted it or not. And the AOCs and the others in the squad, hey, listen, if they gain power again, we can expect these threats to only increase.
This is not the party of Bill Clinton or Barack Obama. This is the party of the AOCs.
All right. Chris Woodward, American Family News. Folks, we're going to keep continuing to inform you of what is going on out there. All right. Great to be with you this morning. And we'll get to see you again real soon. Take care. Bye for now.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
Preborn's whole mission is to rescue babies from abortion and lead their families to Christ. Last year, Preborn's network of clinics saw 8,900 mothers come to Christ. Please join us in this life-saving mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.